and the trees where she'd found the path we followed the night before. So there were her tracks too, but they were frosted more than hers, so I could tell which were which. I kept stopping and listening. She had stopped at the top of the first big bank and had a fag by a birch tree. There was a roll-up butt squashed into the dirt and smears of a muddy hand on the white bark. I was starting to feel excited. We all leave tracks of where we've been, but some people leave tracks that are easier to follow. Because I could now predict where she was headed, along the path towards the road into the little chef, I went out wide and sprinted up and through the thicker trees. Ma wasn't as fit and fast as me, and I thought I could make up her start and cut her off before she got to the road. I knew where she was going, and I knew why. She had the money. I had to climb up and run through the Scots pine, always looking and listening, down to my right for where the path ran. When I got to the top, the sun had broken the mist and was glinting off the top of the pines, and then away down to the path it was still flat and misty. I was trying to figure out how far she could have got. If she'd gone to the road, she could go up to the little chef. I didn't know if they sold drink, or if she could get it first thing in the morning. But alcoholics will always find a way to get it if they want it. You can't trust them. If they say they've had one, they've had 10. If they say they've had none, they've had 20. I came up to the top, above the little chef. The dropping into the path was a sheer cliff, about 10 metres to the bottom there. I could see the car park where we nicked the Rolls Royce. I crept down along the edge of the top, going from tree to tree. I heard her before I saw her, and it was sobbing. It came through the mist like a dry cough and echoed. I flattened onto the ground and crawled towards it. She was sitting, ghost grey against a tree on the edge of the drop and convulsing like she was being sick, and the sound of her sobs ran across the woods. I crawled till I was about 15 metres from her and lay watching her from behind her frosted tussock. I got the gun and levelled it and set the bead to a V on the back side of her head and waited. She was still now, and I had my finger on the trigger, and it was pumped 10 times and there was a pellet on the breech. At that range, it would go through 9mm plywood on 10 pumps. I couldn't see the detail of her face with one eye closed, and the bead focused on the grey blob that was her through the mist. I breathed in and waited with her in sight. I thought about her, and the days and nights since I was wee, when she was asleep or out of it. My jaw was clenched tight and ached, and cold was pricking me where I lay on the ground. Then I shouted, "Ma!" She turned her head, and I took my eyes off the sight and saw her face. Her mouth was open and she was dribbling snot, and her eyes were pink, and she called in a tiny voice, "Sal," I shouted, "you left us, you left Peppa." She creased up her face like it was hurting and hacked out a sob, and it echoed. I shouted again, "you left her, Ma, she came and got you, and you left her." She stood up slowly looking around her, and she moved slow. I kept the gun on her. She shouted, "Sal, I'm sorry. I'm sorry." I started to stand, and she saw me up above her and turned towards me with her hands out. I shouted, "Did you take the money?" And she nodded, and tears were dripping off her chin and down into the frost. She put her hand in her pocket and took it out and held the notes up. She stepped nearer the drop in front of her, down to the path in the little chef. I took a step forwards with the gun on her still. She was standing on the edge by the big tree, but looked back up at me. I started to see her more clearly as I walked down through the mist. Her face was screwed up and her eyes were closed and soaked with tears and mist. I kept the gun on her. My heart was beating hard. "Were you going for a drink?" I said. She turned so as not to look at me and staggered and nodded again, and her body convulsed into a sob. Then she stepped forward and walked off the edge. There was cracking twigs and a grunt and then a thud and rustling. I dropped the gun and ran to the edge of the cliff and looked down. She was on her side with the big coat spread out round her like a skirt on the white frost. She was still. One arm up like she was pointing and one arm back behind her, and her legs were twisted together. My heart started banging faster and faster, and a tight knot clenched up in the centre of my chest and sweat burst out on my forehead. I staggered, dizzy, backwards, and felt sick coming in my belly and chest. I clung onto the tree to stay up and tried to breathe and felt the breath stick in my throat and not go in. I hung there against the tree, feeling the ridges in the bark of my fingertips, finally got a breath in and held it. The sweat was freezing onto my face, but my chest was burning. I fell with my face into the bark of the tree and the ridges and dents pressed into my skin. I stayed there like that, not breathing, with my arms around the trunk to keep me up. When I took in a breath, I breathed in the tree and the bark scratched my lips. Things were starting to go black, with just wee flashes. Then I heard a man's voice shout, "Sal?" And then shout it again. I stayed by the tree and I heard feet running on the path below, and then he said, "Christ, are you okay? Stay there. Sal? Sal?" I let go of the tree and crawled to the edge and looked down. Adam was standing over Mo and he looked up. He said, "I saw you up there from the car park. I saw her fall." He knelt by Mo and he had his hand on her forehead and he was feeling her neck. He looked up again. "I think she's concussed. She needs to sit up." I got up then and ran down the long slope through the trees to the path and then back up and sprinted to where Mo was. Adam had her sat up and she was moving her head and blinking. He was holding her face and looking into her eyes and going, "You're okay? Can you hear me? What's her name?" I said, "Claire." He said, "Claire, you fell and you've had a shock. Can you hear me?" Ma's eyes rolled a bit and then she shook her head and said, "Sal?" Adam said, "Sal's here." Then Ma's head flopped back and her eyes rolled and Adam took the weight of her head. He was patting her face gently. Her face was soaked and smeared with dirt and her head looked like it was too heavy for her neck. Adam was going, "Claire? Claire?" in a soft voice. He was wearing a blue fleece and jeans and he pulled the fleece off and wrapped it round Mo's shoulders. He had a t-shirt on underneath and his arms were thick and muscly, but he was really gentle the way he held her face. He turned to me. "She's in shock. It's pretty soft here where she fell. I think the wind's just knocked out of her. I was coming back to my car and I looked up and I saw her fall, and then I saw you. I knew it was you." There was a pile of frosty leaves all sprayed around her where she'd hit the ground. If Peppa was there, she'd have said it was a good job she landed on her arse. I said, "She's my ma." We were walking and she didn't see the edge. He said, "Easily done in the mist." Ma looked like she'd gone to sleep. Adam looked at me and he looked worried. He said, "I'll lie her back down." I said, "You could slap her. It might wake her up." He started to lower her down really gently and he said, "There doesn't look like there's a head injury. She's breathing." I said, "Get her in the recovery position." He let her lay back and then he got her behind the knee and pulled her up and then turned her onto her side. Then her eyes opened and she jerked and opened her mouth and retched like she was being sick, but nothing came out. She breathed in again deep and said, "Sal," again. I said, "I'm here, Ma." Her eyes were shut, but she was breathing harder, and Adam pulled the fleece out from under her and covered her. She lay like that for a few minutes, breathing hard on her side with her eyes closed, and then suddenly she opened them and said, "Jesus, what did I do?" Adam said, "You fell from up there." She said, "Sal?" She started shifting, and Adam helped her to sit up. She sat up slowly and stretched her face, opening her mouth wide like she was gulping. She opened her eyes wide and looked up at me. Adam squatted down next to her and started squeezing her legs. Ma went, "Ow!" and jumped a bit. Her face was all smeared and red from crying, but she was looking at Adam. He held his finger in front of her face and moved it, and her eyes followed it. He said, "How many?" She said, "One." He said, "How many of me?" She said, "One," and smiled. Adam held her face again and looked into her eyes and he felt her arms and pulled her fingertips and said, "Feel that?" Ma said, "Aye." Then he said, "Tell me your name." And Ma said, "Claire Brown." And Adam said, "What are your daughters called?" And Ma said, "Sal Marina and Paula, but we call them Sal and Peppa." Adam looked round at me and said, "How is Peppa?" I said, "She's fine, aye. She's back at the camp with her Nana." Ma said slowly, "Do you know each other, do you?" Adam said, "We met up by the stones on the frozen loch. I was skiing. Yes, I know Peppa. You don't forget Peppa." And he laughed, and his eyes went wide and sparkled, and I thought how beautiful he was. He helped Ma up and said, "Where does it hurt?" And Ma said, "My arse." And he laughed again. "You were lucky. That's quite a drop." Ma said, "I am really hungry. I'm so hungry." She looked at me and then pulled me in and cuddled me. And I said, "Don't say sorry." and she had her mouth buried in my neck, and she said, "I won't." She pressed the money into my hand. We walked across to the little chef, and Mo limped a bit and kept clutching at her back. Adam told us he was going back to uni, and he stopped for breakfast, and he saw us when he was coming out to his car. It was quiet in the cafe, and we got a booth on the far side where I could see the door. Me and Mo both ordered a big breakfast, and Adam had a coffee. He told Mo, "You need to be careful in case you've got concussion. If you feel sick or feel like you're going to black out, you should really see a doctor." I said, "It's okay, we know a doctor." Adam asked me how old I was, and I told him, and he said, "Wow, you look older." And I felt my face getting red. Mo put her hand on my head and said, "Nah, she's still a bairn." And I said, "I'm not." And Adam laughed. Mo went to the toilet and I sat with Adam for a bit. And then I said, "Adam, don't tell anyone you met us, right? We're not supposed to be here and there's someone after us and we need to hide in the woods for a bit. Don't tell anyone about us." Adam said, "I won't." "Who's after you? I could help you." I said, "Nah, we're safe. We just need left alone. I'll look after them, Mo and Peppa. I've got a knife and I can protect them. I'm not scared of anything." Adam looked straight at me and said, "No, I don't think you are." "You are an outlaw then?" And I said aye, and he smiled at me and said, "I can't believe you're only 13. He got up to go as Mo got back, and she said thank you to him and shook his hand, and he told her to see a doctor. We watched Adam drive off out of the car park in a little blue car with a roof rack with skis on it. Mo said, "He's bonny, Sal, so he is." I said, "Peppa fancied him." Mo said, "I fancy him." And she laughed. And then she held my hands across the table and said in a quiet voice, "I got too hungry, and I got too angry, and I got too lonely, and I got too tired, and I got too scared. And when I'm scared, I run. And I was running to find somewhere to blot it all out, Sal. That's what I've always done. When I saw you and Peppa and what you'd done and why you'd done it, I just wanted to run and blot it all out." Her face was soft and her eyes were bright again. She had no makeup on and she'd washed her face in the toilets and it shone. She said, "I thought you were going to shoot me." I said, "I was. I will again, if you leave Peppa." She sighed hard and picked up my hands and kissed them. We paid and I bought some ibuprofen from the wee shop for Ingrid and we got milk. We started back up and I ran to the top of the ridge above the little chef and got the gun. We went on the path up towards the valley and we went slow because Ma said our legs were sore. Ma told me about when she was wee. She was fostered to an old couple called Cliff and Mary because her Ma couldn't look after her and she never saw her and she didn't know who her dad was. Cliff told her dad was a gangster. Cliff and Mary were alright, but they were too old, and she thought they only fostered her for the money, and they never adopted her. She wanted to find her Ma one day, she said, and see what she was like, and if she was still alive. They lived on a scheme of new houses, and they had a garden and a garage, and they went to the kirk. Ma said she liked the kirk in Sunday school, and she learned the Bible, and they went on holiday to Spain one year when she was about 11. Cliff did electrics for the council, and Mary was a dinner lady in the school. She met my dad at school. He was a year older than her and his name was Jimmy, but everyone called him Maz. Ma said she hated school and she was thick and she plunked it most of the time. She used to go to the park and drink and smoke weed with kids from school. She said the first time she drank she felt brilliant. She said it was like someone had turned all the lights on in the world. She said, "I'm not clever like you, Sal. I don't know anything. I don't even know how to stay sober." I said, "Just don't drink. Not even one." She said aye, and we crossed the river, and she had a rest on a rock and a fag, and I looked for ash saplings because I wanted to make a bow, and I was going to laminate it. I cut one about the width of my wrist. We started back towards the camp, and the sun was up high and starting to melt the frost and snow. I told Ma not to say to Peppa about Adam or about her running down to the little chef, and Ma said she wouldn't. When we got back to the camp, Ingrid was sitting by the fire with a blanket round her and carving a bit of wood and teaching Peppa German. Peppa was sharpening thin sticks with her new knife. She said, "I'm making arrows, Sal, for if you get a bow. Will they work?" I looked at them and said they'd need flights, and at the end we'd need a weight to make it go straight. And she said, "The German for arrow is file. They have a P and an F together in some words, like the word for pepper." Not my name. The stuff they put in haggis, it's got a P and an F. It's Pfeffer. And you say it, Pfeffer. So my name would be Pfefferepa. Why have different countries got different words for everything? I said I didn't know, and I didn't, but it was a canny question. Ma sat next to Ingrid, and Ingrid put her arm around her and said, okay, in a quiet voice, and Ma nodded, but then she started crying. Me and Peppa watched her. I'd seen her cry a lot, and it didn't upset me, but it made Peppa look worried. She said, Ma, do you want to go and see the goddess called Cheryl? Ma laughed and said, okay. Ingrid took some of the ibuprofen and went back up to her bender to sleep, and then we went up through the woods towards the moor in Magna Bra. I left the gun back at the camp, but I brought the monocular and my knife. I took the backpack with the raisins and the paracord, and I filled a bottle of water from the kettle in case we got dehydrated. On the way up, Peppa talked all the time, and I walked behind them. She told Ma all about what Ingrid said about the goddess and about Ingrid being wee in Berlin and losing her Ma and living with Klausie and Hansi. She told Ma loads of German words and all the swear words, and Ma laughed at them and kept saying, Peppa, when she swore. The snow was soft at the start of the moor up towards the stones, and we saw a buzzard. As we climbed, the snow got thicker, and in some places it was blown into ridges that were iced on top in the wind. The wind got up and was stiffer the further up we got, and it was northerly and cold. We all sat in the lee of a dry stained dyke and ate the raisins and drank water and looked back down at where we'd come from. You could see our prints in the snow. The wind was making clouds skid along and they made big grey shapes that flew across the snow. Then Ma said, What's that? And pointed. Just below us, about 15 metres away, there was a snow ridge, and sitting in against it was a white hare with black ears. We all sat still and I watched it through the monocular. I said, It's a mountain hare. It's gone white for winter. It was sniffing and its nose was twitching, but its ears were flat and it didn't look bothered by us at all. Peppa said, Don't kill it, Sal. And I said, I'm not going in to kill it. Even though it would be good to eat and the skin would make a good hat. Ma said, He's sweet. The hare just sat and looked at us and then scraped a bit under its front feet. It was a big one, much bigger than a rabbit. And through the monocular, I could see it still had some tufts of grey hair in amongst the white. Its eyes were yellow and it had long lashes that blinked. When we all got up to carry on, the hare went rigid and alert and then ran away down away from us into snow ridges, and you could see the bottoms of its big wide feet. Ma smiled at me and we carried on climbing up. At the stones, Peppa ran around and around shouting, Hail Cheryl! And me and Ma looked out at the view across and back down the valley towards the locks. The lines of forest fading and below them flat fields and the river snaking. The town was hidden by a hill and far beyond it was a flat, bluey-grey smudge that could have been the sea. Ma said, It's a big place. I said, It's 379 square miles total area. You can see it from satellites in space because there's no light pollution. It's just a dark patch in the southwest of Scotland above the Solway Firth. Ma felt the top of the stone she was leaning on. It had ice across the top, and the lichen looked like it was under glass. She turned and watched Peppa running around the stones. She said, Does Peppa know about what Robert was doing? I said, A bit. She sighed and held my hand and squeezed it. Peppa ran up to us and said, I'm hungry. And we turned and went back down. On the way back, Peppa told Ma about Adam the skier. She said, He was lush, Ma, and he made Sal go red. Ma looked back at me and smiled, and I smiled back. Peppa raced off down the hill towards our woods, and Ma walked next to me. She said, You know, I told him your real names. I said, I know, he won't tell. Back at the camp, Ingrid was asleep, and I made rice and beans and corned beef for tea while it got dark. We made food for Ingrid, but she didn't want it, and Ma went and sat with her, and they talked for a bit while I shaved the ash poles down and Peppa read her book with her clip lamp. Ma said she'd sleep in her bender, and we put a hot stone in a towel to make the bed warm, and Peppa went to bed, and Ma did too. But I sat up by the fire and watched Ma's bender till it was late, and I heard owls screeching. Chapter 16. Mist. In the morning, I checked Ma was still in her bender, then got my fleece on and started the fire while they all slept and the sun was just coming up. I boiled the kettle and made Ingrid some pine tea with sugar in it and took it to her bender. She was fast asleep and I left it by her bed. I put Ma's Converse by the fire because they were damp, and then I got the gun and my monocular and went off to have a look around to try and shoot a rabbit. I climbed along the ridge at the top above the camp, all past the spruce trees and followed it along where there was nearly a sheer drop down on the side into the woods at the bottom. Then I found a twisty path going down and climbed and slid down into a dip where there were hazel trees with lots of poles and straight sticks coming out. These are good for making arrows if you make a bow and arrow like I saw Ray Mears do. I went further along and found a wee house all broken down with trees growing out of it. There was a wall made of stones and a bit of a chimney. On the other side was a wider path going on into more woods and I walked along it. It was an old forestry track leading down but there were no tyre tracks on it. There was a clearing further down and sheer rock walls all around it and big flat stones lying about in it, covered in thin snow and frost. I saw a flash of a rabbit tail running away across it and hid down behind a pine tree. I sat and waited and I got out the monocular slowly. Across the clearing under the rock walls there were rabbit holes. One had new mud outside and I scanned across and saw one just sitting near it, a big one. Its ears were straight up and I could see the whiskers twitching. Then two more hopped up next to it. Then another came out of the hole and there were four all just sitting. The big one started scraping at the snow and the smaller one hopped up next to it. It hopped away coming towards me, then turned and watched the other three. They started scraping and pushing at the snow and they were nibbling at grass underneath. The big one just sat with his ears up. He hopped further away then, still towards me, and sat again. He was watching the others and keeping lookout. The other three were hopping along, scraping and nibbling, and he just sat. Then really far off a dog barked. The big rabbit stamped its back legs three times, bang, 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 and all four of them shot off towards the hole and vanished. I sat where I was, and the dog barked again. I got up, and I was glad I hadn't shot the rabbits. I didn't want to kill those rabbits. I climbed through the woods again and got to the top of the ridge and followed it along the top of the sheer cliff that looked down on the clearing. You could see the forest stretching away down, white and grey in the frost, and two big stretches of mist like arms lying across the bottom of the valley. In a gap in the mist, I could see the road faint between the trees and a tiny grey car went along it and disappeared into the mist. It was quiet then, and I sat on the cliff edge looking down at it all. The dog barked and it was even further away, like a wee gruff voice shouting, "Ark!" I sat with my feet hanging over the cliff. I felt filled up with the cold and silence and started feeling my body go light and numb. First my bum and my legs, then it crept up till I was just looking again from a big empty space out into the silver misty valley. The wee light started dropping down like raindrops across it and I was hanging there peering out at them. They formed little lines and zigzags that danced across the view in front of my eyes and my eyes were holes and behind them was nothing, not even me. A crow brought me back. It squawked right above me in high Scots pine and then two others started. I don't know how long I had been there, but my legs and bum were still numb and I had to stand up and rub them. Peppa and Ma and Ingrid all flashed in my mind and I started running. I was panicking and my heart was throbbing and I heard a voice in my head start saying, "You can't do it." It said it again and again and the rhythm I was running, holding the gun down in my left hand, the monocular bashing me in the chest on its strap around my neck. "You can't do it. You can't do it." I hammered along the ridge with the frost below me in and out of the big trees, slamming my feet down on the frosted snow that chugged under me. "You can't do it. You can't do it." I was heaving for my breath by the time I got to the path that leads down to Ingrid's bit, and I flew down it, feeling pain stabbing in my chest, dropping onto my heels as I went down and down towards the camp, getting whipped by twigs. Two pheasants burst out from the bushes, flapping and clattering off away into the wood. I could smell the fire as I got nearer and the voice stopped. I slowed and just walked the last few metres once I got on the flat and jumped the wee burn by the pool and Ma and Peppa were by the fire in blankets drinking tea. I said, "Where's Ingrid?" And Ma said, "Still sleeping. Are you all right, Sal?" I was still breathing hard and my face felt all flushed and red. I went into Ingrid's bender and felt her forehead and she was warm. She opened her eyes and smiled at me. She said, "I'm okay, Sal. You don't worry." I got in with her and cuddled her. She felt light and bony and tiny like a baby. Her hair smelled of smoke and pine. When Ingrid was asleep again, I got out of the bed and went out to the fire. Ma was stirring a pot of porridge and Peppa had bowls and a pot of jam. Ma said, "Sal, are you okay?" I said, Ingrid's ill. Peppa said, she's got a bad back. She breaks all the wood with her feet and it makes it sore. Ma said, we'll look after her, Sal. We had the porridge with jam in it and then Peppa said, I'm going to run. And she went belting off into the wood and I shouted, be careful. But she was gone. I sat with Ma and she smoked a roll up. There were still lots of things I wanted to say to her. So I said, let's go and watch the badgers. She said, aye, all right. She saw the air gun standing by her bender and when she got up she said, is that Robert's? And I said, aye. I nicked it and brought it with us. Ma stared at it for a minute and then said, come on then. I wrote, watching the badgers in big letters on a flat rock we used as a seat by the fire with an ember and made an arrow with sticks pointing down to the valley below us. Ma said, she'll see that. I got a blanket. The wind was coming northwesterly, so we walked down the river a bit before we crossed on some stones. Ma had no problems walking and jumping around in the woods. I thought she might be all girly and worry about getting her feet wet or go on a bit mud, but she was like me. She was strong and she could climb a slope quick, and she jumped the stones across the river with her big grey coat swishing, and I didn't have to help her. We walked across the flat valley bottom where there was still mist hanging in the trees. The trees were oaks and coppiced hazel and some alder and birch. I said, we'll walk up slow and stay downwind and we might see them coming out. And Ma whispered, okay. We crept up towards the bank where the set was and stopped by a big oak about 15 metres away. There was a big pile of mud and dry grass outside it and tracks in the snow. Badgers are less active in winter but they do come out, especially if they can find unfrozen ground to dig for worms and slugs. We sat on the blanket just behind the tree where we could see the set and I pulled the blanket up around us. I showed Ma how to focus the monocular and she watched through it. There wasn't much wind and the set was a bit faint through the mist, but we could see the black of the hole going in against the snow. Ma lowered the monocular and turned and looked at me. She smiled and said, Peppa said you got your period, Sal. I said, she tells everyone. She thinks it's funny. Ma said, were you okay? I said, aye, Ingrid looked after me. I had to burn my pants. Ingrid gave me painkillers and a hot rock for my belly. Ma said, I'm sorry I wasn't with you, darling. It's horrible, innit? I said, it was okay. Ingrid said now I was a woman. We watched the set and it was quiet, not even crows or leaves rustling. Nothing moved and Ma just sat next to me staring out across at the set. Then Ma put her arm round me and we sat like that for ages. Suddenly, a badger's head appeared in the hole with two black stripes down it looking out and Ma went all tense and whispered, Sal. It came straight out and stopped and was sniffing and then another one came out behind it and then another. The third one ran out and ran in front of the others and then sat and they all sniffed. The first one was biggest. I had never seen one not on a screen before. And they're bigger than you think, and they move all smooth and their backs ripple. The two smaller ones started nosing about in the snow and leaves, and one of them kept running away and running back to the others like he was wanting to play. The big one sniffed around and then started off on one of the tracks that led almost straight towards us. The other two got behind it, and all three came rippling along towards us, and Ma grabbed my hand and squeezed it. And I looked, and she had her mouth open and a huge smile, and her eyes were all wide and bright like she was amazed. The three badgers got nearer and nearer our tree and we just sat frozen. They kept on coming and we could hear them scratching along on the snow and see the grey and black hairs on their fur moving and rolling as they walked. About 4 metres from us, the big one stopped and lifted its head up and stared straight at us. It was staring straight into our eyes with the other two behind it, with their noses down, still sniffing and scraping. The two behind her looked up and then all three were staring at us. I wanted to laugh because their faces looked so startled and they had wee ears sticking up. Ma was letting out a breath really slowly. We sat like that for a while in the silent wood, me and Ma under a tree staring at three badgers. Then there were thumps and skittering from feet from down towards the river and I knew it was Peppa sprinting through the woods and I turned my head. The big badger turned slowly and trotted back towards the set with the two others behind. I heard Peppa shout, Ma! Sal! Then she came running up through the trees towards us. The badgers were gone straight into the set. Ma laughed and said, I can't believe that. I said, neither can I. They're usually nocturnal. I think it was a mother and two cubs. The cubs must be nearly a year old. They get born in February. Peppa had arrived and heard me say that, and she said, "Look me, I'm born in February." And she skidded into us and we all flopped over in a big pile and Ma went, "Oh, Peppa!" I sat up and pushed Peppa off me and said, "Ingrid would say that was magic." And Ma said, "It was? I've never seen anything like that." Peppa was standing up and brushing all the snow and twigs off her and she said, "Did you see them?" And we said, "Aye." We got up and shook the blanket out and walked back up and Ma told Peppa about seeing the badgers and Peppa wanted to go back and watch again, but I said it was no good now they'd been spooked and we'd have to come back at dusk on a night when there was a big moon. Peppa said, "They wanted to see you, Ma." "Aye, they must have," Ma said. "Everyone wants to see me sober." Back at the camp, Ingrid was still in her bender and we went in to see her and she sat up and told us she was in pain and her lower back hurt. Ma and Peppa got the fire going again and then they went and got more sticks and I boiled the kettle and then went and sat with Ingrid. She was propped up on her bed with blankets behind her and she looked grey and really tired. She didn't want to eat and I gave her the last 4 ibuprofen and codeine and then gave her pine tea with sugar. I told her about the badgers and she smiled and said, "I see them a lot in the daytime. They're special ones who like the day. I saw her cubs in June when they were little. They love to play. The big boar comes up into camp in summer, at night. You want to know where they go in the winter? They go down along the river and dig in the mud and sand and they turn over big stones to get insects and slugs along there. They are very strong animals. They cross the river even when it's cold." I said, "Can they swim?" "Oh yes, they are excellent swimmers. In summer, the cubs play in the river. I have seen it." I said, "Can we show Ma how to make bread?" And Ingrid said, "Yes, she must learn." Ingrid was too tired to come out, so me and Peppa and Ma got all the flour and yeast in the big bowl and we made bread by the fire. Ma kept laughing and saying, "Are you sure this is how you do it?" And I kept going into Ingrid and showing her the dough and she told me what to do next. Kneading it was hard work and we all three did it in turns and Ma and Peppa threw it back and forwards to each other like it was a ball. While it was rising by the fire, I put potatoes in the fire to cook and set the fire going in the bread oven and Peppa told Ma all about our new book, which was about a boy and his mother was dying of cancer and every night a monster came into his room and told him scary stories. Ma said it sounded sad, but Peppa liked it. She told Ma the story of kidnapped and told her all the Scots words in it and Ma laughed. When the bread was risen, I scraped all the embers back and we put it in the oven and Ma sat on the ground and watched it cook through the hole. She kept shouting, "It's getting bigger, it's going all brown," and she got really excited when we took it out and put it on a stone to cool. It looked lovely and it had the nicest smell of anything in the world. We had to take Ingrid to go to the toilet and we left her there because she said she wanted to be on her own doing it. We helped her back when she called us and then she asked us to heat up water and put it in the big bowl so she could wash. And we lit some of our candles in the bender when the lights started going. Me and Peppa and Ma had potatoes and cheese and bread, but Ingrid said she wasn't hungry and she stayed in her bender. After our tea, I got the head torch and went out into the woods near us and found another good little ash tree and cut a pole out of it about 2 metres long. Then I sat by the fire and started shaving it down with my knife. I was going to flatten one side and then laminate the 2 ash poles either side of a bit of spruce with pine resin. I was going to lash it with paracord while the resin went off and then shape the whole thing into a bow. I'd seen it done on YouTube and you have to just keep shaving away and shaping it thin at either end and then getting thicker towards the middle. It was easy to shape wood with a Bear Grylls knife. Laminated wood is strongest. Ian Leckie taught me that. Peppa read her book with her clip light and Ma went in to see Ingrid. It was quiet with just the sound of the fire. This is what I liked best in the world. Sitting by a fire at night and listening to the sound of it and carving wood. A little breeze started up and it was westerly and warmer. I could hear Ma and Ingrid talking, but not the words, and smell fag smoke coming out, so they were smoking roll-ups, and Ingrid coughed a bit. Ma was in there for ages with me carving and Peppa reading. Ma went in her own bender, and it rained, and I worried that it was going to leak on her, so I went through to her with a head torch, and she was asleep. The spruce was working, and there were no dips or anything on the inside, so she was warm. Chapter 17. Fog. The rain had stopped, and all the snow was gone. Only grey crescents of ice left in between the rocks and behind the benders. There was thick white fog, so you couldn't even see the trees from the bender door. I managed to get a bundle of kindling going, a as it started getting light and had to use a lot of the wood from the middle of the stack in the rack because the wood on the outside was damp. I shaved a dry stick from the middle for tinder and then got some dry twigs going. The fire smoked a lot and pumped up into the fog and hung over the camp in a cloud. Looking down towards the river from the camp, it looked like a flat white sea and you could hardly see the trees. They were just grey lines in the fog. There was no wind and little beads of silver water formed on the spruce on the benders and on my fleece arms while I was by the fire putting in sticks. I put two piles of wood by the fire either side to dry out and got water from the burn. Ma came out of her bender and went to pee in the latrine and then ran back to the fire and sat by it in her grey coat and had a roll up. I made the tea. We had black tea with sugar because we had no milk left, UHT or fresh. Ma sat and got warm by the fire and then she said, "I had a good talk with Ingrid last night, Sal. I told her all about us and the flat and Robert. I told her all about drinking. She knows a lot about it. She's treated people for drinking. The thing is, Sal, I can't stay here. And also, she can't stay here. And neither can you. And neither can Peppa." I said, "Why?" Ma lit another roll up and rubbed her forehead. Little dots of moisture were forming all over her coat. "Look, Sal, I know you wanted to hide and survive, and you did that. And you looked after Peppa because I didn't. I know that, and I'm sorry for that. I'm an alcoholic, and I can only survive if I stay sober. And, well, the thing is, I need to be with the people who can keep me sober." I said, "I can keep you sober. There's no drink here." Ma said, I know you want to, but you can't, Sal. Only I can, and only I can with the people I know from rehab, and Ian. You don't need to keep me sober. I know about what's wrong with me now after the rehab, and I can't have you doing everything and looking after me and Peppa all the time." I didn't say anything. I got up and got my bow and sat down again with a knife and started shaving it. Ma carried on talking. "There's something else. Ingrid thinks she's really ill. Really, really ill. She thinks she's got cancer, and all the pain in her back is the cancer. She's in bad pain, Sal, and she needs to go to the hospital and get treated properly. She needs proper doctors and medicine." I said, "Will she die?" Ma said, "She will, aye. If she doesn't get treated. They can make her better, but not here in a bender in the woods." I said, "I'm not leaving Peppa. I'm not getting split up for Peppa." Ma said, "Look, Sal, I don't know what will happen." "Right, look, in rehab, I only had to do two things, okay? Not drink and be honest. That was it. I just had to not drink and be honest. So I had to face up to and talk about and be honest about all the things I did. And all the things I did to you and Peppa. Can you see that, Sal? I had to be honest and tell the truth. If you're honest and you tell the truth, then you get better. I got better, didn't I?" I got up and walked over to Ingrid's bender and she was sitting up in the bed and she had her eyes closed. I stood and looked at her. She opened her eyes and smiled and said, "I am good." She rubbed the wee scar on her cheek. I walked back out. The wind was picking up and the treetops were getting clearer in the valley and starting to sway. The fog was rolling like waves. My heart started up beating fast and I felt hot and red. My chest felt tight and I breathed hard to get it feeling loose. My legs started vibrating and I walked off, away from the fire, and I walked a bit further and then I started running. I heard Ma shout, "Sal," but I kept on, along the flat bit of the camp and down and into the trees over clumps of grass and ferns and round boulders. The fog was still thick the further down I went and I was running into it, not seeing what was coming, just running and breathing in the damp air. The ground was soaked with wee puddles and streams in the leaves and they exploded water up as I banged through them. I still had my knife in my hand and the blade flashed in the corner of my eye as my arms went up and down running. And I kept on and felt the blood pulsing in my ears and rhythm with my feet slapping down onto the ground. I got to the river and ran down it and then jumped in where it was thin and went through some sheer rocks and on the other side I ran up into the trees swerving when one came flying at me out of the fog. Then I stopped. The noise in my head kept on, the thump 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 of my feet and blood. I stood still in the fog and breathed it in. I was in a white cave surrounded by it and grey birch trunks. All the thumping in my head got less and less, and then it stopped, and then I breathed deep and slow and listened to nothing. The air felt soft and smooth going into my lungs. My skin felt tingly and warm. The words Ma said bounced around inside my head. Sober, cancer, can't, hide, survive, honest, truth, pain. Then a dog barked, and it was close. And then I heard a voice. A man's voice shouting. Another man's voice. They were flat and sounded dry coming through the fog. Feet and stamping. A bright yellow-shaped blur, moving, crackling, and a beep. A voice on a radio, then a flat man's voice saying, okay. I turned and ran back. The dog barked more. I sprinted and jumped and flew along, back across the river and up, whipping past the trees. Towards the top, the fog was thinner and my blood was chugging in my ears. I ran back up the steepest bit onto the wee path that led along to Ingrid's bit, and the fog was clearing more as I got up and ran into the camp, and Peppa and Ma were by the fire. Then Ma saw me and she shouted, Sal, put the knife down! I looked and I still had it. Peppa ran up to me and she'd been crying. I hugged her and walked over to the fire. Ma said, I told Peppa. The fog was starting to lift across our camp and everything was glistening with wet silver drops. I went into Ingrid and she was sitting up in her bed. She said, there are men and dogs in the woods, Sal. I can smell them. I said, I know. Her face was in a shadow and I stepped in further and knelt down in front of her. She lifted her head and smiled and I saw her big long white teeth and the wee scar in her cheek. She was just staring at me smiling. After a bit she said, something is going to happen, Sal. And I don't think you can do anything now. I think you have done everything you can. Sometimes you can't stop things. The tears suddenly came out of nowhere, but my face stayed the same, and they just came out and went down my cheeks. Ingrid put her hand out and touched the top of my head. She said, you brought me light. Thank you. I could feel the warmth from her hand on the top of my head as I got up and went out. I wiped the tears away so Peppa wouldn't see. She was standing by the fire with Ma and she was biting her lip. The fire was starting to go out and it was cold. Just a wee wisp of smoke drifting up from it. I looked around at the three benders. Ours, Ingrid's, Ma's, and the spruce branch umbrella over the fire, and the wood store, and the bread oven. There was pants and a t-shirt hung on the paracord washing line, and pots and cups in the big tin bowl by the fire. The gun was leaning up outside our bender, and the fishing rod was propped against Ma's. The three bits of wood for the bowl were shaved and leaning on one of the rocks we'd used for a seat. Ingrid's tin of pine resin sat next to the cold fire. The air was still and quiet. Ma had her hand on Peppa's shoulder, and they were both staring at me. The helicopter was sudden. We didn't even hear it getting near. It just came up over the trees behind us, loud, chop, 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 so loud you had to shout. It was Polis. I could see the guy sitting, looking down out of the side, talking into a phone and looking down at us. I grabbed Peppa's hand and I said, run. And Peppa shouted, Ma! And we ran and Ma ran after us. I shouted to Peppa, go up to the moor. And she took off, away ahead of us, and I followed her. And Ma followed me, shouting, Sal! We climbed up through the woods, running in a line, Peppa in front, and she kept turning and looking back at us. Ma was puffing, going up the slope, and I waited and grabbed her hand and pulled her. The helicopter stayed over the camp, but it went higher, and we could see it hovering, and it had police on the side. We went into the big Scots pines where the ground was covered in long needles, and it squelched and spat water as we ran through it. I had nothing in my head, only get away and don't get nicked, and then stay with Peppa, and then stay with Ma, and then Ingrid. Peppa was up through the pines and just at the edge of the moor when she stopped. Ma and I came smashing through all the branches and we stopped too and looked out onto the moor. There was still snow in patches and more as it rose up towards Magna Bra and the stones. Peppa said, which way? Ma said, we can't run, they'll get us. I just stood looking up towards the stones where the snow was lying in big long thick lines with heather in between. At the top it was almost all white still. In the wind, the sun was breaking from under the clouds and the sunlight flooded the whole moor for a second and then went and it was grey and dull again. The chop, chop, chop of the helicopter was still there behind us. I breathed and thought and tried to stop and plan. I wanted a plan to come. I needed a plan to come. Something small and achievable I could do right now and make a step towards us thriving. Peppa said, Which way, Sal, they're coming? The snow was grey and washed out, and I couldn't walk on, and the sounds all around me faded to far away. The larch needles under me were yellow, and the cold air seemed to stand still under the grey sky. Something was shifting about in me. Something like silence. Something white. I said, I'm not leaving Ingrid. Ma hugged me and said, I'm not leaving you. And Peppa said, will we get split up? I said, no. I was still holding the Bear Grylls knife. I looked at it and then chucked it as hard as I could out into the moor, and it disappeared into the heather and snow. We started walking back down. We went through the Scots pines and then down through the woods and down the big slope. The fog was all blown away and the sun came out again and everything looked gold in it. When we came to the ridge above our camp, the helicopter was still hovering and there were three polis. One was standing outside Ingrid's bender talking on a radio. One had a dog and it was sniffing all around the camp on a lead, pulling him. And one was a woman and she saw us walking back down towards them and spoke into her radio and then walked up to meet us. Chapter 18. Home. Peppa was dancing round the house in her pants. Ma was on the phone and I was looking out of the window at the wee garden in the front. Peppa had Salt and Pepper on YouTube and she was going, ooh, push it real good, ooh, push it, and shaking her arse. It had snowed again and the pots and the wee bench were covered. The garden was white and soft and the sun was just going down. Ma got off the phone and said, Ian's coming in 5 minutes. Peppa, get your jeans on and wear your new trainers. And Peppa went, yo, Mum, in an American accent. Ian Leckie's car pulled up outside and I saw him get out and open the wee gate and come down. And I went and opened the door and he said, oh, Bonnie Sal, and hugged me. He hugged Ma and said, everything all right? Ma said, aye. And Peppa came running in from her room in her jeans and trainers going, Ian Leckie, Ian Leckie, you are specky. And Ian went, hello, Peppa. Ma said, come on then, let's get going. It takes an hour to get there. Sal, get your fleece, it's cold. I went through to the spare bedroom where I'd left it. There was a bed and Ingrid's rail from the bender with all her clothes and the Chinese jacket. Her boots were all in plastic boxes by the bed. Peppa sat in the front and me and Ma sat in the back. Social services were paying for the house and we had 3 bedrooms like our flat and they were all on the same level and no stairs. Ian was coming down all the time and taking his places. He took Ma to meetings and he took me to interviews and meetings with a psychologist and tomorrow he was taking me back up to the court and I'd know how long I was going to get in jail. I was just going on my own with Ian and Ma was worried about me being lonely. I told her. I had a solicitor, 2 social workers, an educational psychologist, a police psychologist, a mental health worker and a police liaison officer. And Ian. I wouldn't be lonely. I had done 4 interviews with the police and 4 interviews with psychologists and 3 with the social workers. Because I knew Ma couldn't get charged, I told the police everything, from when I thought about killing Robert to when we came out of the woods. I had to tell them about Ingrid nicking the Rolls Royce because they knew about that anyway, and that was how they found us. But it took them 3 days, and for the first day, they just searched all along the woods at the bottom by the road and didn't come up near where we were. I asked if Adam told on us, but they didn't know who he was. The polis who interviewed me were 2 women and they were nice and not as thick as the men polis. I had a solicitor called Fiona McKenzie with me all the time and she loved me and she got me bail with conditions. She said it was unusual to get bail in a case like mine but the court had heard reports from social services and psychologists and I was being made a ward with a guardian. She kept saying I wasn't going to go to prison but I'd go to a secure place for disturbed kids where they took you canoeing and rock climbing and I thought that would probably be all right. We didn't know how long I'd be there yet, but she said it depended on what I said to the psychologists and social workers and what the judge thought. My social workers were called Catherine and Neil, and they were there all the time too, and they interviewed me a lot about Robert and what happened, and I had to point to dolls if I didn't want to say a word like cock or balls, but I just said them. They asked me all about Ma, and I had to be careful because I didn't want her charged with neglecting us, and I just blamed Robert for everything, and I told them all about Ma not knowing. And I said Ma cooked us food and looked after us and made bread, which was a bit true because she had made bread in the woods. They asked me if I was angry and I said I wasn't. But then I got angry when they started talking about Peppa and what had happened to her and I said nothing happened to her. I had a plan. I sorted everything so nothing happened to her from when she was first born until then. They asked me all about Ian Leckie, and they said he was getting checked and the judge would make him a guardian for us, and then he could drive us about and look after Mo with her drinking. They asked loads and loads about Ingrid, and I told them my life story from the start to when she met us, and Neil kept yawning. I didn't tell them she cuddled us, or that I got into her bender with her and cuddled her, or that I kissed her, because they'd think she was an old leser who was abusing us. I told them how she looked after us, and taught us stuff, and took us to see the goddess. I told them how she looked after me when I had my period, and how she made candles and bread, and Peppa's hat, and bought me a monocular, and it made me cry. I told them I loved her, and she was the best person I had ever met in the world. Catherine and Neil were nice, but they were both wankers. Catherine had green dyed bits in her hair and a hippie jumper, and Neil had white hair and kept yawning and going, "Aha, aha." He wore walking boots in the town and they were all clean and new. They said they were making a care plan for me and Peppa. I wanted to say I'd already done that, but I didn't. Peppa was still calling the goddess Cheryl, and she talked about her like she was real, and she would do things for you if you prayed to her. If I lost something or Ian couldn't find a parking space, Peppa would go, "Just pray to Cheryl and she will provide." I knew she was taking the piss, but Ian thought she was serious and he said to me, "Is she really religious?" And I said, "Aye." Once, when Ian first started taking us, we couldn't find a space outside the children's panel meeting we had to go to, and then Peppa said about praying to Cheryl, and a car pulled out just in front of the building, and we got his space. Peppa went, "The power of Cheryl," and Ian looked puzzled. They interviewed Peppa and Mo a lot, and they left us all in a room together for hours with board games and books and magazines, and Mo said she thought they were watching us to see if she started being a bad mother. But she didn't. They asked Peppa all about how she got the scars on her hand, and she told them about the pike, and they kept asking her if she was scared when we were in the forest, and she said only a ewe's getting us. Ian Leckie went to the police and social work meeting with Mo, and he told them all about her disease and the way she was getting better and not drinking. The psychologist asked me how I felt a lot. One kept asking if I was angry with Mo and Peppa, and I said no, why would I be angry with them? Then he asked me all about killing things, and he asked how I felt when I killed something, and I said, "It depends what it is." I told him about killing Robert, and I told him about killing rabbits and fish and the grouse. I told him about not wanting to kill a deer after I saw one, and about not wanting to kill the rabbits after I saw it warning the others. He said I kept talking about what happened and not how I felt about what happened, and I said it was the same thing. Anyway, I didn't know how I felt, and I still don't know how I feel. Until I feel bumping and pain in my chest or in my head, or until I disappear and watch everything from black space. I didn't tell him any of that. I don't know why everyone is so worried about how they feel. How you feel doesn't really matter. What matters is knowing stuff and doing things. Peppa was talking German in the car to Ian. She was pointing to all the bits in the car and telling him the German word for it. She'd learned a load more German online since we left the forest, and sometimes she says sentences in German to me and Mo. If Mo asks her a question, she sometimes answers it in German, and Mo gets annoyed with her, and she goes, "Warum bist du bossy, Mutti?" which means, "Why are you angry, Mummy?" She swears less in English now, but much more in German, and in the car, she started telling Ian German swear words again, and things she said were really rude, and as he drove along, she made them say, "Lecken mein Hoden," and I don't know what that means, and neither did Ian. But when he said it, Peppa nearly pissed herself laughing, and she knelt up in the seat and looked back at me and Mo. She was jumping up and down with her eyes all bright and her lovely white teeth. If the social workers thought she'd been fucked up by Mo and Robert in the flat and not having a da, they should have seen her then, giggling and bouncing about and shouting, "Do you know what he said?" to me and Mo, and us laughing too, even though we didn't. Catherine and Neil were wankers, but they said one thing that was true, and that was that we were staying together, and even when I got locked up in the place for disturbed kids, Peppa was staying with Mo, and as long as Mo stayed sober, we were staying together. I was 14 in a week. Peppa said she was going to sing Silent Night in German because my birthday was Christmas Eve. But I knew I wouldn't be there after the court tomorrow. So did Mo, but she didn't let Peppa see her cry. Mo said Jackie from rehab was going to come and cut her and Peppa's hair when I went up with Ian in the morning. Mo's roots were shown. Ian started slowing down and looking about, and when he saw the sign for the hospice, snow was falling. We sat in silence in the car and the car park. I couldn't see the entrance clearly because the snow was swirling and dancing and making grey and silver shapes. The light from the entrance was warm and gold and glowed through it. There was a leafless tree, just a wee sapling in the grass in front with a string of silver lights in it. It was rocking in the wind and blowing snow. Next to it was a pond. The snowflakes were landing on the water and disappearing, white and then gone. Then we all got out and went in. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Sal by Mick Kitson. This programme was produced and directed by Dave Murrican at IWC Media. Text copyright 2018 by Mick Kitson. Production copyright 2018 Canongate Books Limited. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.